Many, many years ago, about 500 years to be precise, during the Reformation, there lived a priest whom we now know as St. Philip Neri. He was renowned for his ministry and for his wisdom, and his direction was very highly sought after. And one day, this lady came to see St. Philip, and she was a notorious gossip. She was such a gossip that there was gossip about how big of a gossip she was. Everyone knew that she was the gossip. So she came to see St. Philip to talk with him. And they talked for a little while before St. Philip got out some money and gave it to her and directed her to go down to the market and purchase for him a chicken that he may have his dinner. And he further instructed her as she was going to the market that she was to buy this chicken from the seller and to pluck all of the feathers before she made it back to him so that it would be ready to prepare. So she did this. She went out on her way, bought the chicken, and her whole way back she plucked out the feathers as St. Philip instructed her to do. She was quite pleased with herself. By the time she came back to him, she had a perfectly clean chicken ready to present to him, which she thought was the goal of the task he had given to her. So she proudly presented this clean chicken to St. Philip, and he thanked her and said, "You've done very well, and now I want you to go back along the way that you have walked and pick up every single feather that you pulled out of this chicken." She said, "Well, Father, that's absolutely impossible. I plucked them out the whole way back. The wind's blown them every which way. There's no way I could ever get all of these feathers back." He said, "You have spoken well. So it is with your wicked words. You tell them to one person who tells them to another. They go out to the four winds, and you can never get back something that you have spoken to other people. Truly, the human tongue is sharper than a two-edged sword. It is this that has communicated great love to other people. It is the human tongue long before military combat that has started wars. It is the tongue that does great good, and indeed, the tongue that does great evil. Now, I hope you won't be too scandalized if I suggest that the church has a problem with gossip. You've heard this, haven't you? Right. The church is the hotbed of gossip. It's the place to go to hear the scuttlebutt about what's going on in other people's lives. But our Lord calls us to a much higher thing than this. Indeed, even though there are entire television networks devoted to gossip about certain celebrities and politicians, we are called to be above this. We are called to be about the business of reconciliation with our brother who harms us, and we are called to be guardians of one another's reputation. As counterintuitive as it may seem, the church is absolutely the most inappropriate place in all of creation to encounter gossip. Our Lord comes to us this day in the Gospel of Matthew. This is in the fourth or fifth of the five discourses found in the Gospel of Matthew. And in this text, our Lord is laying out how it is that you live in the Messianic kingdom. He is laying out how it is that we are different than those around us. And it is worth noting that right before the Gospel that we have heard this day, our Lord is talking about the shepherd going after the lost sheep, which if we are to talk to anyone about their faults, the parable of the lost sheep must be our motivation. There is no criticism in the kingdom of heaven that is not motivated by love, by charity, by the desire to renew a broken relationship. This is how we are to live, to avoid gossip and to be reconciled with our brother. So our Lord sets out for us a very simple way to approach this issue. The Greek text is just as clear and plain as the English text. I assure you, I actually checked it this week. It is really this simple. As often as people complain about how complex and confusing the Bible can be, about how it takes a theologian to understand anything, nothing could be farther from the truth about our gospel today. The only thing complicated about our gospel is obeying it and actually living into what our Lord calls us to do. So let us see how it is we are to deal with conflict in the kingdom of heaven. Because indeed, where two or three are gathered, Christ will be in the midst of them. And where two or three are gathered, they will eventually disagree about something, going crossways, having a conflict. Our Lord knows that there will be conflict among believers. But even in times of conflict, and sometimes especially in times of conflict, we have the opportunity to show the world that we are different. We have the opportunity to witness, even when relationships are harmed and reconciliation is needed, to witness to the love of God within the community of the church. So Jesus tells us how to deal with conflict. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. Two people. If your brother sins against you, that is, if it is your business, if it concerns you, if you are actually involved in this situation and need to do something about it, you go see the one who has harmed you directly, without involving anyone else, in order to gain your brother, to be reconciled. When we are harmed, we don't need to tell 20 people about the person who harmed us. We need to talk to one person, the person who has offended us, the person who has sinned against us. And even in this, we do not go to critique for the purpose of being critical, for the purpose of tearing down someone else, but we go to gain our brother. If we are not motivated by love and charity, if our goal is not to renew a relationship, we don't need to talk about anyone's fault, because we're not accomplishing anything. We don't even need to go to an individual and talk to them about their faults, unless we are seeking reconciliation. This is how life is in the Messianic Kingdom. This is how followers of Jesus deal with conflict, as privately, as lovingly, and as charitably as possible. So the ideal is one person harms another. The person who is harmed goes to the brother who has done the offense, and they are reconciled. Forgiveness happens. Relationships are renewed. And no one else needs to know about what happened. You don't need to involve 400 people in order to be reconciled with your brother. But if this doesn't work, you gather one or two others, one or two other responsible, discreet, loving, trustworthy people to come and help in the situation. This goes back to the regulations of the Torah, where two or three witnesses were enough to establish that an offense had taken place. And even here, the goal is still reconciliation. The two or three have not gone in order to harm the brother who sinned, but in order to bring the brother back into the fold, like the lost sheep, to always seek to repair broken relationships. And then, if you won't listen to the one person, to the two or three, tell it to the church, which is kind of frightening, admittedly. Now, in some churches, they have put microphones up front for people to publicly confess their sins. We're not going to do that today. That's had very mixed results. If you would like to have confession, you have two priests, and we can't tell anybody. But the early church, the way the church has been understood, was a place where three things occurred. Where the gospel was preached, where the sacraments were rightly administered, and where church discipline was enacted. Now, I know we hear those first two far more than the third one, but the model of the church given to us, handed down from the apostles, was a church that disciplined. Again, with the same motivation, of gaining the brother, restoring relationships, fixing the problem without causing scandal. I would like to suggest today we do this completely backwards. You've heard Jesus' model, which I think is perfect, one-on-one reconciliation, a small group, and then take it to the church. How often do we take our grievances to everyone other than the person who has grieved us? And then we see that doesn't work, which is shocking because the Bible tells us it won't work. And then eventually we break down and see persons one-on-one to achieve reconciliation. But in doing this backwards, we have needlessly shamed our brothers and sisters. We have harmed the reputation of other people. And we have done nothing to cause reconciliation to happen. The world does this backwards. The world does public shaming long before two people ever get into a room to make up, to demonstrate love, to act out the forgiveness of the gospel. But we are called to be different. We are not called to act as those in the world. We are called to act properly as followers of our Lord. And He calls us to avoid needlessly talking about other people. He calls us in any sort of conflict, even when we are deeply hurt, to always be motivated by love and charity, with the end result of restoring the relationship, bringing the brother back into the fold, making things right. This is the way we deal with conflict in the kingdom of heaven, and this is the way we as Christians are called to deal with conflict and difficulties in our daily lives. To not needlessly drag other people's names through the mud, to seek reconciliation in all things, and to deal as privately as possible with those who have harmed us. For in this kingdom, under the lordship of Jesus Christ, we are not interested in gossip. We don't have time to mindlessly talk about other people. We are far too busy feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, proclaiming the reign of God in this place, that God, through Jesus Christ, has come into the world to redeem the world unto Himself. For the Christian, we simply have better things to do than gossip. We don't have time to gossip. We have so much to do. Let us always follow in the footsteps of our Lord, seeking reconciliation with all people, especially those who have harmed us, and seeking always to renew relationships, especially when we have been deeply harmed and we are so terribly tempted to gossip rather than to be reconciled to our brother. Let us now stand and affirm our faith in the words of the Nicene Creed.
We believe in one God, the Father of the all.